98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport podcast.
It's a very big welcome to Now That's What I Call Sport on 98FM.
This is 98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport with Derek Ryan.
Hello, good morning. It's Sunday, it's 9am, it's 98FM. It can only mean one thing. You're very welcome to Now That's What I Call Sport. Derek Ryan here with you for the next hour. Jamie's still off on his holidays. Due back in Dublin today. He's not going to be happy though. It's very cold out there today. So if you're in bed, stay in there because it's a freezing one out there today. Another busy one as always this morning. In a few minutes time, we're going to be hearing the final part of our chat with Jason Sherlock, the Dublin legend. He'll tell us what life was like for him after the craziness of the 1995 All-Ireland win.
The motivation to kind of succeed, to be the best footballer that I could be, it definitely waned in those couple of years because there was so much, and you get a good snapshot of in the book some of the surreal things that I was involved in and was doing, and probably the focus on the sport definitely took a back seat.
The Republic of Ireland women's manager Colin Bell will join us later as well to look ahead to their World Cup qualifier against the Netherlands next Tuesday.
We want to try and get something out of this game, and we know that we are total outsiders. We're playing against European champions at home, so we know what we're up against, and it's going to be a fantastic opportunity for us to see where we stand.
And later in the show, we'll talk rugby. Leinster and Ireland are on the agenda. Leinster easing past the Dragons in the Pro 14 on Friday night, and Ireland making it 3 wins from 3 in the Guinness series last night. It was a night with some great rugby and some errors as well, though, and Joe Schmidt wasn't overly delighted afterwards.
It's a mixed bag because they generally tend to be mixed bags, but I never mind a mixed bag when you've got a nice, comfortable 9-point margin after they've just scored at the end.
Now, we'll chat to former Leinster and Ireland man Shane Byrne later in the show about last night's Autumn International win and the Guinness series overall. As always, you can get in touch with us here on text or WhatsApp. We're on 0877 98 98 98. We're asking this morning, should Joey Carberry leave Leinster in the summer to progress his career as a number 10? Eddie O'Sullivan seems to think so. The former Ireland head coach, he feels he should leave to get some game time at number 10 before the next World Cup in 2019. Other people thinking it's an absolutely ridiculous thing for him to suggest. We'll be asking Shane Byrne about that later on. But text us in and let us know what you think. Text stay or go to 0877 98 98 98, or you can vote on our Twitter poll. We are at 98FM Sport. And as always, tweet us using the hashtag NowSport. 98FM. But first, let's hear the final part of our chat with Dublin legend Jason Sherlock this morning. Now, last week we heard what life was like for him and the lead up to the 1995 All-Ireland win with Dublin. Now, let's pick things up from after that win. Late in 1995, J.O. got a call, not a good call at all, from his uncle to tell him that his father had been murdered in South Africa.
Yeah. So again, in the book, I give a snapshot of how surreal everything was, both on and off the field. There was so much happening. And around that time, there was a call that probably people can identify with in terms of their own situation. And an uncle of mine, he rang me one Friday. He was preparing for a game against St. Pat's that evening. And he said, listen, Dennis, your father, at that stage he was living in South Africa. He had his own family, a couple of kids, and he just said he was leaving his own. He had a shop over there, and he'd been burgled and murdered. And it was very upsetting for my uncle. I kind of put down the phone and wasn't really sure what way to feel, because again, there wasn't a huge connection with me and my father from when I was very young. And I just played the game that night and went on. And like looking back on it, it certainly had an effect on me. There's no question around that time. So it was very sad. I realise, speaking about it now in the book again, he has family that are still in the country, and I'm sure it's upsetting for them. So it's something that is key to me now going forward. I'd like to make contact with that side of the family again and kind of introduce them to my family at this stage.
Yeah, I'm sure that would be really nice. And you go into a lot of depth in the book about your family history and your dad and your mum and all that, which people can read in the book, which is called J.O. One quote from that chapter says that there was no massive grief or sense of loss, not for a man I didn't know, not even for the man who was my father. You didn't ask, or you didn't try and find out about the details of his death, and you were asked to go to the funeral by the family and you decided not to. which I'm sure was a very tough thing to do.
It probably should have been, but it wasn't really okay in my head at the time what was going on. I just felt that because there was lack of a connection there. But again, we all get a bit older. I've children now myself. I've always explained to them that they had a grandparent that was from Hong Kong. So I think being a bit older now, I realise and appreciate that probably his parents and his brothers and sisters, they probably loved and accepted me just for being me, which I probably had great difficulty when I was younger. So definitely at this stage of my life, it's something that I'm kind of keen to kind of make that connection again.
And I'm sure if the kids want their dad to bring them for a nice Chinese, you say yes now, do you?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. They're happy to eat anything and everything these days.
That brings us on, Jason, to 1997. And the Dublin official didn't like what I said, so he spat at me. It's an under-21 championship match against Offaly. I think at the time you were on scholarship in UCD and you were unable to play for the 21s for that match or for a couple of matches at that time, but you were involved in the squad in a non-playing capacity. You were on the bench. Team wasn't playing too well and there's an official up the line beside you wasn't too impressed with what the Dubs were or how they were playing, and you decided you were going to go and chat to him.
Yeah, I did. And again, bringing that up, it's kind of obviously upsetting to me in terms of the memory of that. But also, that official has family in the country as well, and it's an upsetting time for them as well. So again, the reason I brought up that story and that scenario again, I'm sure there's people that have been at the victim of either physical or verbal abuse. They felt inhibited, and when that happened to me, I felt I'd done something wrong, and I struggled with that. And it wasn't it was only the kind of support of the likes of John Coslow and Mickey Whelan that really got me through that. So again, it wasn't to dwell on what happened. It was more to hopefully identify with people in their own lives that maybe for whatever reason have been the victim of certain abuses, and that they've done nothing wrong, and it's important that they go and get support and they understand that there is support and help out there for them.
Yeah, I think at the time you said to him, if you've got nothing good to say, say nothing at all. You wondered if you had done something wrong. And then when the investigation process began, because you made an official complaint, somebody involved at the time suggested that you should be banned for 6 months from the under-21s for refusing to play in the first place, which brings to mind the phrase of brushing something under the carpet.
Yeah, well, again, it's just a snapshot of, I suppose, the range of opinions about me back then. And again, it's a long time ago now, but it's just interesting because, again, there's a lot of positivity. But I realise and I appreciate it. Certainly it wasn't all positive, particularly because I was underperforming on the pitch. So again, it's part of my story, and that's why I put it out there, and people are happy to read upon it and kind of interpret it whatever way they want to do it.
I know you speak a little bit, which we'll chat about later on, about what you feel was 14 years of failure. But at that time, after 95, when you'd won the All-Ireland and you'd burst onto the scene, and you know you're still around, obviously, and you're playing back for the 21s, and you say yourself maybe your form wasn't what you'd like it to be, and there were certain people who weren't overly impressed by you. What's that time like for you, having gone from the high of 95 to what you feel was a lower period where people were looking at you to be X and maybe at that time you weren't?
Yeah, it was a challenge. And again, it's only in reflection that I understand that the motivation to kind of succeed, to be the best footballer that I could be, it definitely waned in those couple of years, because there was so much, and you get a good snapshot of in the book some of the surreal things that I was involved in and was doing. So that was in my life, and probably the focus on the sport kind of definitely took a back seat. But I'd like to think after 3 or 4 years I did regroup, I did refocus. I realised that I wasn't going to be playing sport all my life, and I wanted to be the best player I could be. I wanted to be successful again with Dublin. So although there was a couple of years where I probably could have done better, I'd like to think that there's a bigger period where I really tried as much as I can, and although we didn't get that ultimate success, I know I can look back now and kind of say I gave it everything over that period of time.
Jason, let's move on to your attempt to get back into the Dublin team in 2012, when Jim Gavin was appointed as the manager, and you were 2 months short of your 37th birthday. You hadn't given up on your goal of playing for Dublin. You come home one evening in November, it's cold and wet, your family are in the front room and it's nice and warm, and you, instead of settling down with them, go upstairs, put the shorts on, go for a run, and your motivation for the run is being back to Croke Park in a blue jersey again.
Yeah, it's a really important part to me, that kind of period, because I was dropped in 2009. It was my last time to play for Dublin. But again, I didn't give up on Dublin. I still, my goal from 2009 till literally May 2013 was to play for Dublin again and play in Croke Park. So there was 4 years where I did all the training with the club and individually to be the best that I can be. And I felt I was still improving as a player. Physically, I was committing an awful lot more. So when Jim took over at the end of 2012, yeah, I had it in my heart, I had it in my head that I could still do a job. And I spoke to Jim, he rang me one November evening, and during the conversation I said, listen Jim, I'm just after coming in from a run, and the reason I was out running is because I still feel I have something to offer, would you consider me? And without hesitation Jim said absolutely. He was willing to assist me in terms of giving me direction from their S&C guy, and we said, listen, if you're fit come next May, we'll definitely have a look at you. So that was my focus, that was my goal, and I tried, and as you say, it was 36 going on 37, and unfortunately the body kind of let me down kind of around February, March. I picked up a back injury, so I rang Jim kind of late April, early May, and I said, listen, thanks for the opportunity, but I'm not going to be in a physical position to contribute. And I put down the phone and there was closure. I was so, there was an element of relief, but there was an element of pride that I'd gone literally 4 years trying to play for Dublin. Although I didn't get a chance to do it, I knew in my heart how much I'd given. So as much as I was very lucky to play for Dublin for 15 seasons, I'm in a lot of ways I'm prouder of those 4 years than I am of my career, because I know I did it, how much I did to prepare to play it on my own, kind of as Muhammad Ali would say, a long way away from the lights.
If you could play one more match, one more professional match, if your body was able to, back then or now, what sport would it be and who would it be against?
Any sport.
Any sport. Well, I suppose of the ones you've played, of the ones you played at a good level.
So I can't pick the Masters final day
in
Augusta. No, God, that's a good question. Geez. Well, I suppose to play for Dublin again in an All-Ireland final, I was very lucky to do in my first year, and I don't do a whole lot of regrets, but I suppose when you look back in 95-96, we were beaten in a Leinster final by Mead, and it was just such a shame that we relinquished our All-Ireland title so easily. And I always would have loved to have the opportunity to kind of retain it as a player. I was lucky enough when I got involved with Jim, we won it in 2015 and we retained it in 2016, which was great to do. So I suppose sporting wise, yeah, it would be Croke Park in September.
I was just going to say, where would it be? You've answered that, but if you could pick your opposition, who would you like to give one more beating to, a Croker for the Dubs?
Just one more beating. There's plenty of teams that I couldn't beat. I think Kerry straight away stick in my mind because I never beat them as a player. I suppose people of a certain vintage would remember Turles, the two games that we had, and Morris Fitz's great point from the sideline. So that was as close as I got to beat Kerry as a player. So yeah, it'd be nice to get a crack at them again.
Jason Sherlock, very finally, you're 41 now, I think. What's next for you? You're working with the Dubs. You've got another job. You've done stuff with your Dubs underage teams as well. You've got your family, of course, in Dublin. What's next for you?
Yeah, well, I'm really excited about the future, and I speak a bit about that in the book. I've gone out into business on my own. I have a website now, www.jo.ie, if people want to look at it. But basically, I'm passionate now about looking to work with people to develop their performance in either business or sport. So that's the exciting part, and that's why the book has been a great part of that process, to be able to look back at all the good things that I can bring forward with me into the future. So I'm really excited about that.
Jason Sherlock there, chatting to Jamie Moore. His book J.O., that's Jason Sherlock's book J.O., is a gripping read, so definitely worth a look over Christmas. Now, last night was a big night for the Dublin ladies. The All-Ireland champions picked up 6 All-Stars at the banquet last night. Ciara Trant, Rachel Ruddy, Leah Caffrey, Nicole Owens, Sinead O'Hearn and Noelle Healy all winning awards, and Noelle Healy as well winning the Players' Player of the Year as well. So massive congratulations to all of those award winners, and especially to Noelle Healy winning the Players' Player of the Year. Still to come, we'll hear from the new Dublin hurling manager Pat Gilroy, and also be chatting to Shane Byrne about Ireland's November series and those Joey Carberry suggestions earlier on this week.
98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport.
Now welcome back to Now That's What I Call Sport. Derek Ryan here with you until 10 o'clock on this very cold Dublin morning here on 98FM. We've just heard from one Dublin football legend in Jason Sherlock, now to another, or at least a former football legend, who's now hoping to become a bit of a legend himself in the hurling. Pat Gilroy played with the with Sherlock in that 1995 All-Ireland win, of course. He ended Dublin's long wait for All-Ireland football success back in 2011 as a manager, and now he's hoping for similar success with the Hurlers. He was talking to offtheball.com's Paul Collins at the AIG Fenway Classic in Boston last weekend, and he was asked about his credentials as a hurling man after all his success with the bigger ball.
As I've said before, I probably would have preferred to be able to be a Dublin senior hurler than a footballer, but I wasn't good enough in reality. It's a game I love to play. I loved playing it. I see my kids enjoy it. I think we are a proper dual county, even though we haven't had the success at hurling, but I think most guys, like nearly every fella on this hurling squad, plays football with their club, and I think that's a good, healthy thing. I think it's a unique thing that we have in the GAA, that you can play two sports while being only involved in one organisation. So it's something that I think is special, but at the same time, when it gets to this level, you know, you probably do have to concentrate on one or the other. Anybody that we've asked to come out and train and play with us, they've pretty much 100% have said they'd come along and give it a shot, you know.
Do you think having won an All-Ireland pass as a football manager, can that translate now into hurling?
I wish you look. You'd hope that you've a lot to bring from that experience, but you're bringing it from all sorts of experience. The management team we have, we've hugely different backgrounds, and we've all had different successes one way or another in life, and you know, it's all of that that you're trying to bring to bring this team as far as we can in the time that we have. But you know, we're far down the pecking order at the moment, and you know, people say the only way is up. Well, there's still plenty of teams below us, so that, you know, you can slip further if we don't you know, improve. And I think really, with the amount of effort that has gone into hurling from all quarters, and including the last management team here, you know, the current position doesn't really justify all of that work. And I think, you know, if you look really coldly at the games last year, there was an awful lot of good in those games too. You know, the results weren't what you'd hoped they'd be, but there was an awful lot of good happening as well. A lot of young fellas came through in the last 3 years. So, you know, we have to try and pick the good things too, and learn from the things that weren't so good. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic, but it's a big challenge. It's a big challenge, you know, when you haven't had success at the top level for such a long time. Like it's a big challenge to get there. But you know, there's a huge willingness in Dublin, and clubs are putting such effort into the hurling side as well as the football that, you know, at some point in time, I'm sure we will make the breakthrough, and you know, we hope we can get them along that journey.
For your first season, are you going to be turning Dublin upside down now, looking for players to add to your squad, maybe even raiding Jim Gavin's squad?
As I said before, I'm heavily invested in the football part. I've put some time into that. I have a great relationship with Jim, and we have a very open conversations about anything. So look, there's plenty of people playing hurling there that you don't need to be interfering with the football team. If there's a footballer that really wants to switch his allegiances to hurling, that's fine. But we'll have open conversations. We're both on the same team here. We're both Dublin fellas and wanting Dublin GAA to do well. So no, but we will look long and hard for players. I always have this view that there has to be one good player at hurling in every club. And you know, in a regional tournament there, we had fellas showed up from Naperoge and from Fingallions, which wouldn't be traditional strong hurling strongholds, and they've shown them well. You know, we've a couple of them here this weekend, and I think sometimes when a guy's with a club like, you know, that's maybe not as strong, when they get to play with stronger players, they get even better. And so we'd see if that happens. But I've been encouraged by seeing what is available outside of the traditional strongholds, you know.
New Dublin hurling manager Pat Gilroy there chatting to offtheball.com's Paul Collins last weekend at the AIG Fenway Classic over in Boston. Nice trip for him. Now, it's a big few days for the Republic of Ireland women's team as well. They make the trip to face the European champions, the Netherlands, next Tuesday in their World Cup qualifier. A big game for them. It's been a perfect start for Ireland so far in the qualifiers. Two wins from two, but it'll be a very tough game now on Tuesday against the European champions. I've been chatting to Ireland head coach Colin Bell this week ahead of the game, and asked him about the news last week, the sad news last week, that Megan Campbell's been ruled out of this game, and for quite a while as well, the Ireland defender. She ruptured anterior cruciate ligaments in her knee there a couple of weeks ago, and that's a big blow to the Irish team.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, Megan is you know, like a class player. Great left foot. She's done a good job for us. And of course, this extra skill that she has with this long throw has been a real big bonus for us. But you know, now she's going to be out for the rest of the campaign, unfortunately, which is a big blow for her, first of all, but then, of course, for the whole team. So we're going to have to try and compensate that.
Now, you go into this game, Colin, in good form. It's two wins from two in the qualifiers so far, and both of those coming in away games as well. So how important is it, I suppose, to continue that momentum that you've picked up over the past few weeks heading into next Tuesday?
Yeah, obviously we want to try and get something out of this game, and we know that we are total outsiders. We're playing against European champions at home, full house. They've beaten everybody the last few games, and there's some really good countries that they have actually not just beaten but really dominated. For example, England, Norway twice, Denmark twice. So they're top nations. So we know what we're up against, and it's going to be. First of all, it's going to be a fantastic opportunity for us to see where we stand. But we want to try and get that mindset, that mentality that we always have a chance against everybody. We're doing a lot of hard work, and we need to be doing a lot of hard work. And also we'll have to work really, really hard on Tuesday to get something out of this game. But we're prepared, and we're obviously we carry on preparing ourselves. And I just want to have that mindset that the girls really do believe that we have a chance, but they have to then obviously define why they believe that, and that's what we're working on, that we do have reasons to find and reason, and we will have then reasons why we feel we can get something out of the game. So a lot of work and a lot of stuff on the pitch and off the pitch that we're doing at the moment.
Yeah, and like I said, it's two wins from two at the start of this qualifying campaign, but this, again, it's the European champions, Netherlands, next Tuesday. Away from home, they're going to be having a packed house over in the Netherlands as well. This is a proper test, I guess, of where you are as a team.
Yeah, we know that it's going to be very, very tough. And Netherlands have, the last few years, been preparing for the European championships, first of all. They knew, obviously, that they were going to be hosting that. So they put a lot of effort into their preparation over 2 or 3 years. And they're obviously 2 or 3 or maybe even 4 years ahead of us. So, we have to take that into account. But that's the great thing about football. Nobody knows what's going to happen. And we just have to make sure that we're up for it. And we've got a very young team. And it's going to be a great experience for the girls, like I just said. But we want to be well organized. And we have to really remain organized through the whole 90, 95 minutes. And that's the thing, when you're playing against such a quality team, if you just turn off for a split second, that could be lethal. So that's where the girls can learn and will learn a lot. And the expectations for us are very low. And I've said this before, nobody expects us to win in Holland. But we have high hopes, but the hopes are grounded in a lot of tactical discipline, a lot of tactical work. And I just hope that the girls can put all their good work that we've been doing on and off the pitch, on the pitch then in these 90, 95 minutes on Tuesday.
Yeah, you mentioned there you've been doing a lot of tactical work. Is this the good form, the two wins that you have so far in this campaign, is that down to the kind of long-term tactical work that you've been doing with the team over the last year or so? Because obviously the qualifiers for the Euros, it was kind of stop and start for yourselves. You couldn't really get a bit of momentum going. This campaign has been good so far. Is that something that you've been working on, trying to sort out tactically the side over the last year or so, and it's kind of coming together now? Is that the reason for that good start?
Well, it's not even a year then. It seems maybe I've been in charge for a year, but it's actually since February, so it's still in this year, 2017. We've been doing in every camp, we've been doing a lot of work tactically against the ball, but we're also doing a lot of stuff with the ball and trying to improve in that level, because we have to improve our game on the ball. We're doing a lot of hard work. And hopefully that will pay off in the long run. We know that we do have a lot to do, and we're trying to, get to grips with the way we want to play, that everybody knows how we want to play, and we have to adapt, obviously, to certain situations. So we've been going through various scenarios for this game, and hopefully we can then react to whatever Holland throw at us.
Yeah, and finally, like I said earlier on, I mean, this is your third game away from home, three games into the competition. You haven't played at home yet, obviously. You've had a better start, I would guess, than you would have nearly hoped for, considering you had three away games, and to pick two wins from two in the first two games is a really incredible start. How important is it to get a good result here now against Holland next Tuesday to set you up for the three home games you have coming up next April and June?
Yeah, I think, you know, if we really mean business and want to be competitive and want to have a say in how the group finishes and who can qualify. Like I said, nobody expects us maybe to qualify as number one, but that doesn't mean to say that we can't try. And also, we have the possibility then, if we don't finish on the top spot, to finish in the second place, which is, again, nobody really expects it, because we've got Holland and Norway as top seeds. And Norway and Holland both have at least two, three, maybe even more players that are world-class in women's football. So, you know, that's a big task, a big ask for us. But these two wins have got us off to a good start. And we want to obviously continue. And we want to make sure that everybody realizes that we mean business and we are competitive. And like I said, you know, yes, it's going to be a tough one. But it's not written anywhere before the games have been played that Holland and Norway are bound to qualify. Or, you know, one of them will finish first and one will finish second. They probably believe that. That one of us will finish first or second. So it's up to us, you know, to keep working really hard and keep our feet on the ground and just keep developing. And that's what we're trying to do also. We're bringing in a lot of young players who may not be quite ready yet, but we want them to be involved in this international setup now, that it is then like a fluid movement that... when they are ready, that they can, you know, come in and take their places. Now they're, you know, gaining a lot of experience. What I never wanted when I first started was like to have a kind of squad and a generation of player, and then, you know, try our best to qualify, and maybe do qualify or we don't qualify, or whatever, and then have to start from scratch again. So we're getting these younger players involved now. They're gaining experience. We're preparing them now for their, you know, big day when they can obviously move into the team. And that's the positive about the Republic of Ireland, as far as I'm concerned. We have a lot of really talented young girls, and we have to work, of course, on our structure within the league, within the country. But there's a lot of talent, and it's not for lack of talent. You know, there's some good girls coming through, and for us, it's important just that we know that we are competitive and that we can hold our own against everybody. And that belief is based, like I say, on a lot of hard work and discipline. And it will obviously continue. We're obviously still not there where we want to be, but we want to continue this and try our best against European champions and see how far and how hard we can make life for them.
That's Ireland women's manager Colin Bell, and the very best of luck to him and his side on Tuesday away to the Netherlands. A big crucial game then for them, and a tough game as well. So we'll of course be following that right here on 98FM throughout that day. Time for a break now, but coming up in the final part of this morning's And That's What I Call Sport, we'll hear from the Leinster camp after Friday night's Pro 14 win over the Dragons. We'll also be on the phone to Shane Byrne to pour over Ireland's Guinness series, which ended last night with victory over Argentina.
98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport.
Welcome back to today's show. Derek Ryan here with you for the next 20 minutes or so here on 98FM. Coming up between now and 10 on That's What I Call Sport, we're going to be chatting to former Leinster and Ireland man Shane Byrne on Ireland's win over Argentina last night and the November series overall as well. We'll also be asking him his opinion on calls from Eddie O'Sullivan, the former Ireland head coach, for Joey Carberry to leave Leinster next summer for a year to get some game time at number 10 ahead of the 2019 World Cup. What do you make of that? Should Joey stay or should Joey go? Text us, let us know. We're on 0877 98 98 98. Text or WhatsApp with the word stay or go, or vote in our Twitter poll. We're at 98FM Sport. Nathan Whelan's here this morning. Nathan, how are we looking so far on the poll?
Well, it's clear to see that Dublin is split because it's 51% in favour of him staying, with 49% say he should go.
So no one knows quite sure yet what to do in terms of Joey. We'll hear from Shane Byrne a bit later on his opinion about that as well. Now, before all that though, Leinster go back to winning ways on Friday night against the Dragons in the Guinness Pro 14 at the RDS. A good win for them as well, Nathan.
Yep, Leinster came out on top of a very convincing win at the RDS on Friday night with a 54-10 win over the Dragons. To highlight how one-sided the game was, the bonus point was secured after only 33 minutes. The try scorers include Josh Murphy on his first start for the Blues, Jameson Gibson-Park, Max Deegan, Jordan Larmer, Rory O'Loughlin and two from the ever-reliable Eason Asewa. The man of the match, Ross Bourne, kicked a fine game with six conversions, I should say, to cap off a great win. Offtheball.com, Sean O'Regan chatted to Ed Bourne after the game.
Yeah, Dragons started very well. We kind of we were soaking a few tackles, which made life very difficult for ourselves. And they were picking and going well. They held the ball well and played a huge amount of phases. And we didn't. There was too many soaks there and playing on top of us. So 10 points down after 10 minutes it wasn't the ideal start. But thankfully we started playing the right areas of the field and started putting the pressure back on them and building momentum into the game. And we had a good 15-minute patch there where we got a couple of tries and then got a foothold into the game and kicked on from there.
Overall, did you expect more from them, the challenge that they bring to the RDS this evening?
I thought they were very physical at the start and even throughout the game. Like, they carried hard, they played a smart game for the first 20 minutes, like they certainly controlled the ball well and stuff. But I suppose we kind of, once we got that them couple of tries, I thought we built good momentum. And as we said, Ross Byrne played us in the right parts of the field and our set piece went well and we just kept building from there. So it was tough for them to play against that, and I think we just started playing on top and playing a quicker game and eventually got our scores.
And up next is Treviso. Would you see that game as good preparation for a trip to Italy?
I see it as tough. Treviso are going very well. They gave Ulster a scare there tonight and they're building good momentum. They've had some good wins this year, so the internationals come back in and there'll be a few lads integrated, I'm sure. So it'll be a tough game, but we tonight really kicked off the momentum into these few big weeks before Christmas, so hopefully we can get over there and get a good win and kick on from there.
You mentioned Ross there yourself, how well he played, and when Cahill came on he got one from two. He just narrowly missed. Yeah. With hitting the post. You see now when Johnny and Joey come back into the fold, there's serious competition in the camp. Is that what kind of drives this Leinster side on?
Oh, massively. There's competition all across the board. You can see it in each position. There's internationals fighting out for the same spot and there's going to be internationals on the bench, so it's not a bad place to have it. Competition improves every player. It makes everyone get better and keep fighting for that starting position. So I think it's definitely helping in preparation for big games, and I'm sure there's some very tough calls for the coaches to be making.
48 minutes under your own belt this evening. Are you happy with your own performance tonight?
Yeah, no, I was delighted to get my first start in the RDS. As I said, we had a tough first 15 minutes, so on the back foot, but then I thought we got a foothold into the game. We got a couple of set pieces. Our maul started going well and our scrum was going okay. So, it was great to get that under the belt.
You've had your own injury troubles. It's great to see you back now playing after, what was it, 26 months or something?
Yeah,
something 28, ridiculous.
28 months. Yeah.
But obviously you seem to be enjoying your rugby a lot more now.
Yeah, no, thanks very much. Absolutely loving it. It's great to be back playing. It's a lot easier than doing the rehab. It's great to be out in the RDS in front of all the fans and my family and stuff and friends. So I just want to keep enjoying every week. I'm not taking anything for granted and hopefully keep building on the minutes. It's great to get some good game time under my belt at the start of the season. So I'm just loving every minute of it and hopefully it continues.
The international series comes to an end. You're still only 24 yourself. 24, isn't it?
24, yeah.
You see the young lads that Joe Schmidt's bringing into the side. How far do you think you're away from maybe putting on the green jersey?
I'm constantly learning from the two lads, Jack and Church. It's great to have them there. There's serious competition in Leinster. There's four loose heads who are all fighting hard. So I'm just learning a huge amount from the two lads at the minute, and I have been for the last few years, and they're both very good at that. Just given all the knowledge, especially Keane, I pick up a huge amount from him in terms of scrum and just around the pitch. We're always chatting about different parts, so I'm just learning a huge amount from them and just trying to build on the game time down and getting here at the minute.
Great stuff. Offtheball.com. Sean O'Regan there chatting to Leinster's Ed Byrne. Now the focus on the show turns to the international side. Ireland had a fairly comfortable 28-19 win over Argentina last night in their final November series game at the Aviva Stadium. So it's three wins from three. Leinster's Adam Byrne made his Ireland debut last night in that game, and he spoke to Offtheball.com's Oisin Langan afterwards.
Yeah, it was incredible, you know. Yeah, I always have to be ready to play, but maybe I thought, you know, maybe my chance had gone, but I kept the head down and I came in on Monday and, you know, it's hard to tell if you're going to be involved, but Monday night I was kind of like, oh, you know, maybe, and kind of let myself dream a bit, didn't get too good of a sleep, but when the team was announced on Tuesday, it was surreal and, you know, it was incredible, and telling my parents and stuff, and they were obviously delighted. So then we had Wednesday, was the day off, and, you know, I kind of settled down, I had my head in a good space, but once the team was announced on Thursday, I got some really, really nice messages from, you know, a lot of people, and, you know, it was obviously emotional, but, you know, I tried to keep my head in a good space, and, you know, it's just been incredible. You know, I've tried to make sure I knew my detail, and I just wanted to, you know, fit in. I didn't want to sit back. You know, I wanted to kind of, you know, try obviously add to the team. And, you know, it was just incredible from leaving the Shelburne today and seeing the support, and even just seeing the support throughout the week. It was really special, and yeah, it was quite emotional, but you know, it was a great day.
Great stuff from Adam Byrne there. Hopefully the first of many caps for him. Ireland's other winger last night was Jacob Stockdale. He scored two tries as well. So head coach Joe Schmidt's pretty happy with his wing options at this stage.
It's a position that we cast a net. I thought Darren Sweetnam did really well last week. His late entry into the South African game, where he managed to get to the cross kick from Joey Carberry and fought really well on the ground, that actually really contributed to Jacob Stockdale getting the try on the other side of the pitch. So that's what we want. We want people working for each other, and so that other players get opportunity. One of the best things about this group is I feel the experienced players helping the younger players in. And I think Jacob Stockdale tonight had some great help from Rob Carney. I thought Rob Carney was really good. He obviously saved a try with that cross kick, and he got up and took that. He made a couple of scything runs. He brought the ball back in the lead up to Jacob's try. And so that's what you want. You want people feeding off each other, a bit of experience and some youth and athletic talent. And yeah, the more often we can put that together, the better.
Right, so I'm joined on the line now by former Leinster and Ireland man Shane Byrne to look back on that win last night. And Shane, a good first half, took our eye off the ball a little bit in the second half though, but Joe Schmidt will be pretty happy man this morning.
Yeah, on the whole, I think he'll be a little bit annoyed at the three tries given away. You know, it is one of the things, they have a very hard up defence, a little chip in behind can catch them sometimes. But on the whole, I think, yeah, excellent. They came out, it had to be the same as it was against Argentina. It had to be a very, very physical game that they were up in their faces. And that was absolutely to the fore, particularly in the first half. A lot of pressure that was put on Argentina. They were knocking on, even when they had the multiple phases. And but so many guys put their hands up. Farrell played excellent. Carney was reeling in the ears. Like, absolutely had a great game. But it was all about Stockdale, really. What a game he had. This kid has really exploded on the scene. Played the last season and a half for Ulster brilliantly, and is now in the green jersey producing some fantastic rugby.
Yeah, you mentioned that Jacob Stockdale, obviously he's had a very good November series overall. He's really impressed over the last few games. We've had a few lads who've kind of come to the fore over the past three games. The likes of James Ryan even had a good game today. You mentioned Rob Carney, who many predicted was nearly gone from the international scene. He's had a good couple of games against South Africa and Argentina as well. Andrew Conway impressed as well. So there's a good few options now for Joe Schmidt that weren't there 3 weeks ago for the Six Nations next February.
You're 100% right about that. It's good as well. And you have Bundy Aki now, who seems to have nailed down the 12 shirt. And yeah, to me, Conway and Stockdale are the two absolute winners in this November series. That they really, Andrew Conway is one of these guys that, you know, he doesn't play all the time for Munster. He can't get on the team all the time. And he's always been a superb, polished performer and tries his best. Not the biggest guy in the world. My God, does he work so hard with everything he does. And, you know, played brilliant man the match in Fiji. I would have given it to him in South Africa. And then came on, had a great impact as well off the bench yesterday.
Yeah, I guess one of the things as well Joe Schmidt will be happy about is the fact that these are three tough games. South Africa obviously blew South Africa away completely. They weren't at their best. But Argentina as well, very strong side, and Fiji as well. These weren't walkovers by any stretch of the imagination. Okay, Fiji wasn't the best performance of all time, but still, three wins from three, Joe will be very happy with that.
No doubt about that. And, you know, the Fiji game, looking back in it, it was probably the best way to have it because the guys wouldn't have learned as much if they had a romp and they had just scored tries and it was all great. The fact that they had to fight very, very hard to win that game and come back against Fiji, that is going to stand to them a lot more than just having a run-of-the-mill international just going through the motions and an easy win. Fiji are a handy side. But yeah, you're dead right. Three from three is exactly what he would have targeted. Rose into the Six Nations. He's given every player in the squad got time on the pitch, and that's exactly what he wanted. He wanted to just make sure that his squad is ready. No matter who is out or who is in, he has depth now pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, you mentioned the Six Nations, and I suppose one of the headaches that Joe Schmidt is going to have, a good headache, is, well, there's a couple of them because there's so many options now throughout the pitch, but the back row is something that has been a headache for him in trying to narrow it down to three or four lads over the past couple of years or so. We've seen CJ Stander, Sean O'Brien and Peter O'Mahony all start today. Rhys Ruddock started on the bench today. No Jamie Heaslip, no Josh van der Fleer. You know, there's so many options for him now. Going into the Six Nations next year, what do you see as the starting back row if Jamie Heaslip does come back and if he's available? And also, who do you see maybe coming off the bench? Who are the four lads who are going to be in the squad for the first game of the Six Nations?
I think the ones that started the last international, I think that's it. I think O'Mahony, O'Brien and Stander, I think that's the back row going forward for a while at least. And I think Ruddock will be on the bench. Ruddock has been thereabouts for a long time, and you know he would have maybe been a more regular starter for Ireland if CJ Stander hadn't arrived on the scene, and you know just started to make his position cemented onto the team. And yeah, I think that's it. Heaslip, listen, we don't know what's going to happen with him going forward, but you know obviously he's an amazing talent and he'll be there or thereabouts. But I think for the Six Nations in the back row, I think we saw it there against the Argentinians.
And another one of the headaches that Joe Schmidt has now is the centre partnership. We saw a couple of years ago it was Jarrod Payne and Robbie Henshaw. Then Gary Ringrose came in, and for the last year it's been Ringrose and Henshaw. Ringrose is injured, and Bundiaki comes in now. Chris Farrell has impressed over the past few weeks as well. Again, who are your two going into the Six Nations? And if Robbie Henshaw isn't in that two, is he a viable option for potentially starting at full back, or has Rob Kearney now sealed that spot over the past 3 weeks?
Well, now, that is, in an ideal world, whether it'll happen or not, I don't know. But, yeah, I would be very happy with Henshaw at 15 and Ringrose at 13, because Ringrose is a special talent in attack as well, as we've seen. And but you have to have Henshaw on the pitch. He's such a fantastic player. You know, if Ringrose isn't back, the Henshaw-Aki partnership worked brilliantly. And I say Joe Schmidt was actually pretty peeved that he couldn't have given them another run together. Just to see how could they keep on developing. And although Chris Farrell came in and did very, very well as well. But yeah, to me, Ringrose, when he gets back, has to be back in that 13 jersey just for that extra little bit of something that he has. And I would have no problem with Henshaw 15. Is it likely to happen? I don't know.
Yeah, considering he hasn't, I presume, started there over the past few weeks, it may maybe mean that Joe Schmidt doesn't see him in that role. Rob Kearney, though, again, a lot of question marks about him heading into this series. Has he answered those questions?
Yeah, well, against Argentina, he certainly did. He ran like I haven't seen him run in years. He played absolutely superbly, made the tackles when he needed to make his tackles, and, you know, that's what you want to see him. It was like Rob Kearney of old. Yeah, I was one, I raised an eyebrow when I saw him going straight in, considering he's literally only back from injury, but he did well. And in all the game time that he had, he made very few mistakes and really capitalised on it against Argentina.
Good stuff. Before I let you go, Shane, one talking point this week has been speculation, or at least talk of maybe Joey Carberry leaving Leinster for a year next year, potentially going to, we don't know where, Munster maybe. Eddie O'Sullivan's been talking about it, that he needs to get game time at 10 before the next World Cup in 2019. He won't get that at Leinster. Do you see that happening? Do you think that might be a good idea for him?
Yeah, well, it would make sense in a lot of ways if that's where Joe Schmidt sees him definitely being, you know, because he plays a lot of time at full back with Leinster. but he is a special talent, and it's really just where you, what way you want to do it. They're going to have to make a decision on that, because any of the sides obviously would love to have him, because he only knows one way, which is forward. We saw the time before he got injured, he was controlling the game well against Fiji, but yeah, it's a difficult thing to do. He's so talented that he wouldn't need to play it as much as normal people, should I say, but yeah, it is something that is going to have to be thought about. But let's hope if he does go, it's not too far afield.
Not to Munster anyway either, I suppose.
Yeah, well, yeah.
That's the other thing as well.
You know, you've got Keighley down there as well, you know, who's starting to play well. Long time coming as well, that he's, you know, finally getting some recognition for the player that he can be. So, yeah, they'd have to think long and hard about where he'd go.
Good stuff, Shane Byrne. Thanks very much for joining us this morning and for the last 3 weeks as well. And Shane, pretty open there, surprisingly open to Joey Carberry potentially leaving Leinster next summer for a year at least. We asked you to vote earlier on Twitter and on text on that exact topic. Should Joey Carberry stay or should Joey Carberry go? The results are in. Nathan Whelan.
Yes, it was a bit touch and go for a while. It was 50-50 for a long time, but stay 50-50. Just about edged it. 52% say he should stay at Leinster.
So Dublin pretty much divided on whether or not Joey should stay at Leinster. Hopefully he does. That's it for this week's show. Thanks for joining us this morning. A big thank you to all our guests and to everybody who helped put the show together. Nathan Whelan, Jamie Moore, Sean O'Regan, Oisin Langan and Emma Carroll, who's been keeping the show afloat this morning as well. Now, That's What I Call Sport Extra is on tonight from 11 o'clock here on 98FM, and Jamie's back in the hot seat next Sunday from 9, no doubt boring us to tears with all his horrendous holiday stories. I can't wait for that one. Have a great day, everybody. Bye bye.
98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport.
Back live this Sunday morning from 9.
98FM.